Proverbs chapter 16, we're doing some topical studies from the book of Proverbs. Proverbs deals with many topics, to be honest, it deals with all kinds of them. Tonight, as we come to Proverbs chapter 16, and several other verses here in the book of Proverbs as well, we're going to look at friendship. I'd like you to look at Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 28. A forward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separateth chief friends. That would kind of go, you would think, without saying. Then look at chapter 17 and verse 17 and 18. A friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. A man void of understanding striketh hands, and becometh surety in the presence of his friend. That last phrase of verse 17, where it says a brother is born for adversity, some of the teenagers interpret that to mean that my brother is here for me to, you know, just harass him. He is born for adversity, and that's why God has put us together. They kind of have that not in the right setting there. But anyway, they quote, I hear them quote that every once in a while. Chapter 27 of verse 6. This is a great verse on friendship. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. It's important to have the right kind of friends that are going to sharpen you and make you better. Verse 9. Ointment and perfume rejoice the heart. So does the sweetness of a man's friend by hearty counsel. And then verse 10. Thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not. Neither go into thy brother's house in the day of thy calamity. For better is a neighbor that is near than a brother far off. Verse 14. He that blesseth his friend with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, it shall be counted a curse to him. Verse 17, iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend, or friends help friends. Chapter 8, go back to chapter 18, I think I missed that one. Verse 24. We'll start here. Let me say several things about friends. First of all, the book of Proverbs tells us how to get friends. Now, this is what it says. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly. If you want friends, you yourself have got to be a friendly person. And if you don't have any friends, most likely the problem is not everybody else. Most likely the problem is you. You're the one common denominator with everybody else. So that would most likely be the case. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. So Proverbs tells us, first of all, how to get friends. If I want friends, I've got to show myself friendly. And when I show myself friendly, my friendliness must be recognized by others. I've got to show myself friendly enough where other people recognize that I am friendly. That is this. I need to get out and I need to reach out and show my friendliness to other people. You say, Pastor, that's just not my personality. Well, if you can't reach out and show friendliness to other people, don't expect everybody in the world to flock to you and want to be your friend. That's just not the way that that works. So, how do I show myself friendly? Number one, don't quarrel. Ever meet people that always want to quarrel? Always want to argue? Always want to debate? Usually it's more like a fight sometimes, it seems like. Anyway, there's people that way. You don't have to argue with people all the time. And you don't have to quarrel with people all the time. Instead of that, love them. That's the first thing you do. The second thing is be endearing. Don't be miserable. Don't be complaining. Don't be grouchy. Don't be grumpy. But be endearing to people. Thirdly, be free with them. Or you might say it like this. Be real. Be yourself. Don't be one way here and another way somewhere else and then something else. You know, don't be one of those people that are whatever the crowd is that you happen to be with that day. That's how you are. That's not how you make real friends. You need to be real. You need to be yourself. You need to be genuine. If you can't be yourself, ultimately, if you make a friend with somebody and you're not being yourself, pretty soon you're going to be yourself. And pretty soon people are going to see you for what you really are. Might just as well start out that way to begin with. Be genuine, be real, be free. That is also be open and honest with them. And then number four, some of you might think I'm nuts when I say this, but try to please them. So I don't want to be a man pleaser. You're taking that a little bit out of context. Try to please. How are friends made? Is anybody here who's had a friend? Raise your hand. You've had a friend. Okay, put your hands down. You have some of you all. I got to tell you a true story. I couldn't believe this. I was counseling this couple from way up north. They would come down once a week for Lowellville, and they came down for several weeks. And they had been married for 30 years, or maybe longer. And I've kind of finished counseling with them now, other than holding them accountable. Well, I still meet with them once in a while, but pretty much it's accountability over the telephone. And I was talking to the husband one day, and I said, have you ever had a friend? Because I was trying to get him to talk to his wife. He just never talked to his wife. And they're looking at me, and he says, no, I've never had a friend. I was shocked at that. This man, I would have to say, is mid to late 50s, maybe early 60s even. And I said, you've never had a friend? No. And I looked at his wife, because I was like, okay, I'm not really believing this guy. And his wife says, no, Pastor, all the while that I've known him, he's never had a friend. Which really affected his relationship with his wife, because he didn't even know how to make a friend. His wife ought to be his closest friend. He didn't know how to make a friend out of his own wife. What do friends do? They talk. Friends talk. Sometimes they just call each other up on the phone for no other reason than to talk about whatever it is that they're going to talk about. They probably call them. My dad did this to my mom one day. My aunt was over, and they were sitting there talking. Really going. My dad is just sitting there listening. He stops them. He says, can I ask you a question? What were you guys just talking about? And they looked at each other, and I'm not sure that either one of them, if I remember right, neither one of them remembered what they were talking about. But they knew they were talking. Everybody knew they were talking, to be honest. Friends, that's one thing friends do, is they talk. And they spend time together. If you're going to make friends, you've got to do those things. And you've got to try to please them. Do things that would be endearing to them. Number five, visit them. And when they visit you, welcome them into your home. Allow people to come into your home, and you go into their home. Say, well, I don't have a home. Well, then take them out to lunch every once in a while. I don't know what to tell you. But you've got to show yourself friendly. Number six, do good, and when possible, be a blessing to them or serve them somehow. You need to do that. And if you want friends, that's a simple formula of how to make friends. Do those things. Now let me say this. Many who complain about other people being unfriendly fail to see that the fault is in them. Fault is in everybody else. The fault is in them. There are those that say churches aren't friendly. I suppose that there is some truth in that. But as a mature Christian, I will tell you, I don't go to church to make friends. I go to church to worship God. Making friends is a nice fringe benefit of it. And Wednesday night prayer meeting is one of the best places there is to make friends. But it's not why we come to church. We come to church to worship God. And ultimately, that's just one of the nice things that happens. But usually, those that say churches aren't friendly are the ones who make no effort to show themselves friendly. And truth be known, maybe there's some people that I'd rather not be friends with anyway. You never know that. Maybe not everybody wants to be your friend. Find somebody else. Not only does Proverbs teach us how to make friends, it also tells us the benefit of friends. Now you're going to say, well, I don't need any. Actually, yes, you do. You need God did not make us to be independent. God created, even when it comes to marriage relationships, God said it is not good that man should be alone. That was God's plan. So he made Adam he made for Adam, Eve. That was what God said. You need friends. You need someone to talk with. You need somebody to share with. All of us guys know this. Even working in the garage, when there's somebody else there, things just go a whole lot nicer, a whole lot smoother, with a whole lot less frustrations, or at least less frustrations that you let everybody else see, at least that much anyway. But we need friends. Now, look at Proverbs 27:6 again. It tells us, this is one of the benefits of a good friend. This is the opposite of what you would think. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. How does a wound feel? It hurts. You like to be wounded? Nobody likes to be wounded. How about a kiss? How does that feel? Generally speaking, it feels good, right? But the Bible says here, faithful are the wounds of a friend. Sometime a friend has to wound you for your good. And an enemy will kiss you, and you'll think that's your friend, but that's not really your friend. But it'll feel good. Yeah, but it's done with deceit. Now, wise people understand the difference between the wounds of a friend and the kisses of an enemy. The kisses of an enemy are in reality much more hurtful in the long run than the wounds of a friend. Because the friend is trying to help us, whereas the enemy is trying to deceive us. Flattery and insincere kisses can be tools of the devil. What did Judas deceive Jesus with or betray Jesus with? A kiss. What about Joab in 2 Samuel chapter 20? He kissed Amasa deceitfully. Deceitful, there can be deceitful kisses. Now we need correction and we need reproof. And when somebody cares enough to give it, we should value it. Now, if they come at us attacking, we're not going to swallow it right away. And we may not swallow it right away anyway, no matter what they say or how they say it. But you should always weigh it. And you should always consider it. It's not easy to reprove somebody. I know that. We know when we reprove people that there is always the danger of offending that person, and turning them into our enemies. I have done that. I've tried to talk to people about things in their life that weren't right, that were obvious to me and obvious to everybody else. And when you talk to them, for whatever reason, they hate you. And they don't just hate you then. You're their enemy forever. In reality, if they're a good friend, every once in a while, those things are going to happen. Why do they happen? Why do sometimes when you've been a friend with somebody for 4, 5, 6 years and you point something out that might actually help them and they turn out and then they turn on you and they become your enemy? Why? I'll tell you why. The deceitfulness of the flesh. We have a fallen fleshly nature. And when we try to point out something to people that's wrong in their life, and they turn on us and never want anything to do with us. Unfortunately, I've had it happen more than once. It's the deceitfulness of their flesh. When somebody does that to you, you might get upset at first. You might not, but you might. But after you calm down 15 or 20 seconds later, and really that's about all it should take, weigh it. Do you know a pastor, when he's preaching, reproves people? That's part of preaching, Paul said. Rebuke, reprove, exhort. You reprove. Why? What are they for? They are designed for the good of others. Now, I hope anytime you reprove anybody, whether it's a child, a friend, it doesn't make any difference. I hope that your motive is always meant for their good. That you aren't doing that out of arrogancy just to point out you're wrong and I'm right. Because that's just as wrong as anything. The other thing, go to verse 9 here in chapter 27. Ointment and perfume rejoiceth the heart. So doth the sweetness of a man's friend by hearty counsel. Literally, that is the counsel of the soul. Let me say several things. The counsel of a friend rejoices the heart. The right exercise of friendship has power to rejoice the heart. That verse that says, iron sharpens iron. Friends try to help friends. Friendship, let me say this. Friendship is a blessing of the Lord. Let me look over here at James chapter 1 for a moment. I thought I knew this verse. I might have known it earlier today. James, I do know this verse. James 1:17. Friendship is a blessing of the Lord and one of those good gifts that come down from the Father of lights. It says, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Friendship, and if you have any, count them as a blessing from the Lord. Your closest friends, you can probably count on one hand, two probably at the most. The right exercise of friendship has power to rejoice the heart. Secondly, his counsel should be sweet and hearty. When we give people counsel, we ought to try to give it sweet and hearty. Now that speaks of the proper spirit in which to give counsel and reproof. You can't just come up and tell everybody what's on your mind exactly how it's on your mind all the time. That's unbiblical. And it's a mistake. But this particular verse speaks of the proper spirit in which to give counsel and proper reproof. And when given in the spirit, in the right spirit, I should say, it is more readily received than when it's given in the spirit of anger or in the spirit of bitterness or maybe even in the spirit of malice. Thirdly, the counsel that we get and give is according to the fear of the Lord, Proverbs chapter 22. In verse 20, have not I written to thee excellent things and counsels and knowledge? Have not I written to thee? Didn't God write us down some things somewhere, like in the Bible, that gives us good advice? I don't know who your closest friends are, but they should be godly people. And I don't know where you get your advice from or your counsel from. But you really should get all of your advice and all of your counsel from godly people. You really should. It should not be just your opinion. You shouldn't have to say, well, I think this or I think that. It shouldn't be worldly or humanistic in philosophy. The philosophy and the opinion ought to be based on biblical truth. Well, I sit back and just look at that. You should operate by biblical principles. And when somebody asks you a question or you're going to reprove them or however that works or whatever situation it is, it should be based on biblical principles, not your own opinion, not your own philosophy. It'll be good and helpful if the counsel is of the right nature and if it's given in the right nature. Then look at chapter 27 and verse 17. We read this earlier. Iron sharpeneth iron. So a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friends. Somehow when you take a knife or a lawnmower blade or something and rub metal on it, sometimes it sharpens the other one. They sharpen the countenance. We are to sharpen their hearts and their minds. That's our goal. Mentally, spiritually, by our example, by our conversation, and by our outlook in the future, we should sharpen people. What's that mean? Try to make them a better Christian. Help them to become a better person. By the way, I read a lot of different books, and most of the books that I read, I try to read books that I hope will sharpen my Christianity, make me a better other than there's a couple I read, you know, on hunting. Especially this time of year, it's getting close to that time when I'll start flinging arrows at stuff, and so I'll start, you know, reading up on it. But generally speaking, I read books that are going to sharpen me. I don't read a lot of fiction books. I am reading one right now Brother Suits gave me on the, it's like The Coming Apocalypse. I think that's the title of it. I forget who the author is. It's not part of the, what was that series of books everybody just read? That's it, the Left Behind series. It's not part of that series, but it's real similar to that. And even that points out an awful lot of biblical truth as you go all the way through it and different things that are happening. And this guy must have saw this election and this country the way it is now when he wrote this book. That's unbelievable how accurate it is. By the way, has anybody seen the movie America 2016? You guys have seen it? I got to talk. Everybody tells me I need to see that movie.
Yeah, everybody needs to see that movie.
Do we? Where did you see it?
It's down in New York. It's down where Dan Rolfe is in New York.
Is it not now?
It was last week.
Was it? People keep telling me about that movie. I don't know. I'll talk to you about it later. But, and I don't promote movies. I'm not one to go to Hollywood to get my theology and stuff. But I hear that one there they did a good job with. And Brother Creel, I think, saw it, and I think he said that it was amazing how well Hollywood did with that particular thing. Probably Hollywood didn't have a lot to do with it. Anyway, let's be good friends. I'll talk more about friends next week. But let's be friends that want to help each other, and let's be friendly people.